Hi, and welcome to Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, where we take a deep dive look at all things reality TV, pop culture, and the world at large. I'm an intuitive and an empath, which means I pick up on the thoughts, feelings, and energy percolating in other people and the world around me. I believe there is meaning waiting to be found at every turn, if you're willing to see it. So join me as we dismantle everything from trash TV to high spiritual concepts and learn more about ourselves, each other, and how we're all connected. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Deep Dive with Jamie Stein. I am, as always, very excited about this episode because Piper and I are going to be picking up where we left off with our previous Raquel Levis episode. It was so fun to jump in and explore those waters, and it got me thinking about a lot. And this is actually the first time I've had the experience of starting an episode and then getting a chance to pause and to think about things and to take things in and to keep watching the show. And it definitely gave me inspiration for things I want to address in this episode. So I'm feeling really ready to dive in and to keep going. So without any further ado, let's just do that. Welcome back, Piper. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Jamie. I'm well.
All right. So, yeah, having said all that, I want to jump back into the world of Raquel, obviously. And as a bit of a segue, I guess, or as a bit of a way of opening that door back up, I did have this impulse to revisit this theme of triangulation. I actually really found it meaningful and fulfilling to take that moment at the top of the last episode to really slow down and to define what we meant by split and how we're holding that here, both in terms of Raquel and then also just in general when we discuss a lot of these reality TV personalities. And I had a similar impulse just to take a moment to slow things down. And like I said, really pinpoint something specific about this experience of triangulation, and in particular, how sexuality can play a role in it. I know I mentioned this briefly up top last time, but I really wanted to have a chance to drive home this notion that themes of sexuality, and I guess just to be clear, the reason why I feel an impulse to take a moment to really sort of clearly articulate some things is sex and sexuality and sexual energy is obviously a huge part of what we're dealing with here. I mean, the affair itself is the centerpiece of everything we're discussing. An affair, by its very nature, is sexual intimacy. It's sexual consummation. This wasn't just an emotional betrayal. It's a sexual affair between Tom and Raquel. And Raquel, I would say, I think it would be fair to say she has a very ambivalent, complicated relationship specifically to her sexuality and her sexual energy. And then, as I mentioned before, in times and places where I've tapped into what's possibly going on inside of and for Raquel, specifically connected to Tom in this affair, you know, I've felt this possible voice in her that's basically saying, yeah, I'm the naughty, bad little girl who wants to seduce the man of the house into my bed behind the back of the woman of the house. And I mentioned briefly how, you know, a lot of times when I do this type of channeling and I talk about things like triangulation or maybe even mention things like covert incest, I don't always take that moment to really articulate that while, yes, there might be like a really sort of obvious textbook answer to this kind of thing or textbook obvious set of conditions that might give rise to this kind of thing in someone, a lot of times it's also not the most obvious answer, and a lot of times it's not the most textbook answer. And sometimes the messages can be really, really, really covert. And I think that can be especially true when it comes to currents of sexuality and sexual energy and how that can be held in the field. In the spirit of really naming how covert this stuff can be and how divorced it can actually be from any kind of explicit conversation of sexuality or intimacy in relationship, I just thought I would talk about certain ways that, yeah, underground sexuality can show up in a way that might inform someone's energetic experience of themselves in life.
Yeah, I'm with you in this covert conversation about how the way that this is built early on, it doesn't have to be an act of sexual violence or some traumatic sexual overt action, that there's an underground and underlying sort of threat in the field that somehow creates a insecurity or a confusion around what even the relationship to sexuality is. So it could be as benign as somebody just kind of making comments about body, if that was talked about a lot in the family. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's, although it's, even to me, that's an example of almost like a more overt form of a covert message. So like, if I just use myself as an example right now, and I'll just sort of speak about this very generally. You know, there was someone in my early experiences who brought a lot of charged emotion to me. And part of that charged emotion, a lot of times, was a very deep, what I would call rage, a very deep force of anger. And, you know, what I want to say about that is there was nothing overtly sexual about that force of anger. The conversation, what I was being yelled at, had nothing to do with like my body. It had nothing to do with sexuality. None of that. There was nothing on the surface that tied this in any way, shape, form, or fashion to sex or sexuality. Now, having said that, what's so interesting to me is obviously, you know, when I was younger, well, I guess it's not obvious. I will say when I was younger, you know, I wasn't aware of myself as particularly intuitive. I didn't consider myself an empath. I didn't consider myself any of this. I was just sort of living the world as I lived the world and experiencing the world as I experienced the world. And what I remember, though, is even back when I was young, I didn't quite have the language for it. I don't know that I could have like put words to it, but what I remember experiencing this adult and the rage they were bringing to me. And I remember sensing and knowing this force of anger is specifically coming from this person's pelvis. Like I could feel that it was coming from their pelvis. And as I kind of think back on that sense memory for myself now and knowing more about the larger framework that I was born into, we were talking about framework, right, last time. What I know about this person who is bringing me a lot of this intense, angry energy is this is someone whose powerful energy tended to get shut down in their family of origin. So I don't have a lot of the specifics. It's not for me to know. But if I'm just to sort of feel into this intuitively and hypothetically, I can imagine this might be a person who, where part of them getting shut down is they may have received a message, right, around their sexuality getting shut down or not having a right to their sexuality, just like they don't have a right to a lot of their different currents of energy, right? So if this is an unconscious process that they're in, and if a lot of their disowned rage is specifically about ways in which they got shut down, and let's say part of that disowned rage is specifically about ways in which their sexuality got shut down, there could just be their own inner conflict going on inside them. Like I said, around their disowned energy, their disowned sexuality. And so then when they're bringing their rage to me, again, this is all unconscious on their part. They don't understand what's going on. In their conscious mind, they're just mad at me for whatever reason. But because it's such a level of hysteria, because the rage is so deep, because it's so energetically violent, obviously this has nothing to do with me, Jamie, as a child. They're projecting something that's going on inside of them at me. So if part of what's going on inside of them in that projection moment has something to do with their own sexual wound or their own disowned sexuality or sexuality that was shut down in them, and somehow unconsciously that kind of strong, powerful, angry sexual current that hasn't had a chance to speak is living in the rage they're bringing to me, even though this situation has nothing to do with sex, even though they might not have any kind of like sexual overture towards me, I, as a sensitive feeling person on the receiving end of this distorted projected energy, I very well be, and I think I was, picking up on underground sexual rage that was directed at me. And in those situations, I didn't have the ability to say no to what was coming at me. And so for me, it really registered as an energetic violation. And so in terms of this specific dynamic and this specific relationship that I'm talking about, to my memory, to my knowledge, to my conscious awareness, there was never any act of molestation. There was never any act of sexual assault. There was never any act or anything like that. But there was still an underground covert experience. I experienced it as an energetic violation. And it was an energetic violation that, to my experience, had some sort of underground sexual flavor. And so to me, that's an example of how something can sort of live in relationship to sexuality in a way that's silent, in a way that's covert, in a way where nothing on the surface is speaking explicitly to sex and sexuality. And I think there's so many different... I mean, I've had clients, just to sort of bring in one other type of example, I've had clients who have helicopter parents, you know, who were really on top of them, about like doing well in school and practicing your piano. And you know, a lot of times these are clients who maybe when they bring it in, they're like, well, yeah, it was intense, but you know, it was for my best, or it was this or it was that. And as I'm feeling them, and I'm feeling their experience, I'm like, no, I can feel for you this energy. They were taking something out on you. They were putting some sort of disowned anxiety or inner conflict in them that they can't tolerate and putting it on you in a very intense way that it feels to me you actually experienced as a type of violation. And in some of those instances, I can feel exactly what I'm talking about here. It almost feels like there's some sort of disowned sexual charge there. So there's just so many different ways that this can kind of permeate. And I guess the last thing I'll say in this moment is I just kind of want to qualify. I think I get a little nervous ever since The Deep End and Teal Swan. This is not to encourage people necessarily to like make up things. You know, I'm not saying every single person experiences this. It's just to sort of name something that I think often goes unnamed. And I think a lot of times there's a relief for people in finally being able to have a context and a framework in which to say, okay, wait, actually, this helps make sense of something, because I was someone, again, like I didn't have these typical experiences that we associate with sexual trauma, and yet I'm responding to life in a way that almost feels congruent with someone who's gone through sexual trauma. And yes, this conversation exists on the level of what we're specifically talking about here, which is underground sexual energy. And it's also a great illustration of just covert messaging in general, which I feel like has been here in this conversation about Raquel. And so I guess kind of the last piece I'll bring into this before I just check in with you, Piper, coming back to Raquel, I just really want to reiterate, if I'm right about this notion of some sort of early pattern of triangulation where she's favored by the man of the house and gets a sense of pleasure and power from the man of the house, and then that translates as an adult to like acting that out sexually, or there is some sort of sexual charge there, just to really name, that really can come from something that, again, isn't necessarily explicitly sexual. So we talked about this last time. If like her father, for example, is favoring her and just giving her a lot of energy. And like I said, in my hypothetical example, let's say he's not having a great relationship with mom. And let's just say, yeah, he feels stunted in terms of intimacy. Let's say he feels stunted in terms of sexuality. Let's say he's got an axe to grind there. Let's say he's favoring Raquel partly as a covert fuck you to mom for ignoring him. Again, even though he's maybe not doing anything explicitly sexual, there could be a charge there that carries some sort of unconscious flavor of sexuality. And as kids, we're very sensitive. And as kids, we have our own kind of innocent sexuality that can come through. And so I'm naming this just to say, like, these are kind of the specific ways that these templates can get set and then activated in a more explicitly sexual way later. But it doesn't necessarily mean, as we're sitting here talking about this, that we're declaring that any of these people have necessarily been X, Y, or Z violated in a certain type of way. So I just wanted to bring this in, one, just to be really clear that we're not making assumptions about anything that happened in Raquel's history or who it may or may not have happened with. And also just as a teaching point for people just to think about in their own reflection that a lot of times if there is some sort of energetic pattern you're aware of in yourself and you don't understand why because you don't have like the conscious memories of like an overt message or an overt event, energy is real. And we pick up on it, especially when we were kids, and it can have a huge impact. So I know I just said a lot all at once. I just kind of want to check in with you, Piper, and see, yeah, how this is landing or if there's anything you want
to
say.
No, I think it was great to hear just a sort of a lucid explanation of what covert sexuality, how it can originate. I think it was a good example and super helpful. I think what the last point that you were making there about it being really connected to the energy doesn't even have to be, as you said, some overtly named something, but energetically something's going on there. And then when it's not named also, when I think it's even more potentially nebulous, there's something there where when there's an energy that you haven't learned about yet or know about for yourself and something is riding in on it or sort of being infused with another confusing energy, that alone can be super confusing. And then acting something out later, you know, where you're confused by the actions that you're taking, if you're now find yourself with a married man, or you are, you know, exploring sexuality in a way that isn't clean in terms of consensual, agreed upon, this is just for right now, or this is something I'm hoping will lead to something later. I don't feel like Raquel in this instance, this is where I want to jump in with her. It's like, what's her relationship to her own sexuality?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we can pivot to Raquel. And the last thing I'll say just kind of in response to what you just said is I think it relates to Raquel. I know in the last episode, we kind of ended on this note of how discombobulated she almost feels like that projector that she uses where it's like those scattered lights. It's almost like rather than just being one ray of just like a strong channel of light that runs through her, she's like scattered and it's like all these different little specks just sort of like projected onto the ceiling and the walls. But yeah, I think one of the most toxic aspects potentially of kind of covert underground messaging is, to your point, a lot of times you don't even feel like, first of all, you're not aware of what's going on. It's silent, right? So it's kind of insidious and it's hard to name it. And I have to imagine for most people, even if you had the awareness of it, it's like, then do you even have the right to name it? And I think a lot of times it can even be confused for something quote unquote positive. So if I just go, for example, with the Raquel hypothetical example, let's say she was daddy's little girl. Let's say he was bringing her all this energy. Let's say he was the one who protected her from the mean mom or the mean sisters. I could see her in a way as an adult saying, oh, my dad's the greatest. He's the best. We had the best relationship. He was the one who was so good to me. And by the way, I mean, there'd probably be truth in that. Like, I'm sure there would be really strong currents and elements of love there. And it's not to take that away, but it's also to say, well, wait a second. You might not even be aware, because this became associated with love and a sense of like self-worth, and maybe because it was a preferable experience to other things you were experiencing in the family system, you might not even have the awareness yet of, wait a second, he like kind of seduced me into something that was fucked up and that I paid a price for. So it's just like, there's just, it can make it very hard to sort through all the different layers, because again, it's silent, it's underground, it could be packaged as one thing, even though it carries the tone and the flavor of another thing. And I think this, you know, I think the last thing I'll say is, because I know my listeners tend to be very sensitive, empathic people, like especially if you are a sensitive person, this is the type of thing that can lead people to really sort of question their experience of, you know, what I would call reality or life, of like not trusting themselves, because maybe on one level they do sense like something's off or wrong, but they, again, they don't feel like they have the right to say it, or the narrative that's written about it in the framework or the system or the family system or the culture, it's a different narrative than the way that they're experiencing it. So it can get very complicated.
Well, and there's, to this point, an investment in keeping something underground. So if this energy was related in any way to her childhood experience with parents, the parents, like you were explaining in your example, for even yourself, there's something deeply unconscious for the person. So it's not even that they are consciously couching one thing one way and doing something different consciously as if to fool someone or to, you know, like pull one over on him. It's a deeply unconscious act on all levels. And the commitment or the energetic sort of investment is to keep something underground. And the very nature of doing that is what we talked about last time. What ends up diverts the energy, whether it becomes a smattering of lights or two paths or something that goes underground and pops up as above ground, a mask of something else.
Right. Yeah. I guess just to tie it all together, like you're speaking to, you know, the parent has a blind spot. Like there's an unconscious thing happening here. But then for someone like Raquel, potentially, again, she interprets that, she interprets all the information coming in as, okay, there's a lot going on here with a lot of mixed messages. And so again, sort of bringing in the framework we explored last time, rather than me like questioning any of this, having feelings about any of this, which might jeopardize my place in the system, let me just split off in two. And I'm going to be kind of like, you know, yeah, the good little girl over here, and I'm going to be the little vixen over here. And then here we are.
And I don't even think she thinks she's being a little vixen. That's, again, the point that I'm making. It's like, I'm just doing what everybody else is doing.
No, right, exactly. It's an unconscious process. You know, and then especially just in terms of like, because I know we started to bring in mixed messages, especially from women and like betrayal by women last time. But it's like, if we kind of follow up on what we hypothetically explored last time, if there is sort of a woman of the house there who on some level is resentful of Raquel's kind of innocent feminine wiles as a kid, or, you know, her sort of power as a girl and that energy. And on the one hand, is kind of like holding her in contempt for it. But then in the very next breath, it's like, okay, we're pushing you into pageants. Like, this is where your currency is. This is where your value is. It's like, again, that right there is just such a mixed message. It's like, this is where your worth and your value is. And there's also kind of like a fuck you in it too. So she's just potentially, I mean, if what we're picking up on is correct, she's just getting so many different messages about who and what she is and what's good and what's not good. And yeah, where her value lies and where it doesn't lie, and theoretically not able to say anything about it, even if she were conscious of what was going on.
Yeah, that whole pageant scene, I don't know about you, but feeling the energy of those pageants, I can't imagine a world where that would have been something I would have introduced my children to. So I'm really sort of interested in that whole interested in that whole world. Like during an RA module one time, radical aliveness module.
So radical aliveness, as a lot of you probably know, it's a form of body-based psychotherapy that was founded by Ann Bradney, who has been a guest on this podcast. That's where I got my training. Piper has a training through it. So that is radical aliveness, just for context. But yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So we were doing a training, a module for the training at a convention center where simultaneously something else, it was a pageant, but for like little kids was happening. So you'd come out from the break, you're just in the middle of exploring your childhood and all the things that went around competition and all the different things that happen. And then you walk out and all these little girls that are dressed in these hypersexualized outfits are bouncing around in their makeup. And they're like, I mean, maybe like 5, 7 years old. And when somebody walked around, I was like, I'm just going to start handing parents my card, you know, like for their children down the line when they're done. But it was a really, it was just one of those, whoa, what? I've never really explored this world, but just kind of sitting and observing and imagining all the ins and outs of this particular form of competition. It's so, I mean, if there's people out there in this world, I don't mean to say that it's bad. It's more, I don't understand it. I don't understand its origins. I don't understand its reason for existing in the way that it does. And I think that it creates something potentially relative to what we're talking about with Raquel in terms of competition with other women, being seen and looked at in a certain way for the way they look and what they can get, what they can win by playing that up a bit, how it gets used to move ahead, to win. So I'm sort of holding the realm of pageantry alongside this system of family with mm-hmm. this. Like, I feel like, I don't know how much time she spent in all of that, but to me, it feels like quite a bit. And I think it was also informing this part of her.
Well, I mean, enough time to where at the beginning of the season, she was crying that it's over, you know? So clearly there was a deep identity investment in that, you know? And I think she even maybe mentioned that in the car ride when she had her breakdown, like, I'm done with James. Pageants are over. Essentially, who am I now? And I think maybe if we...
Who am I? And we're going to move all this energy.
Well, exactly. And maybe this is sort of like a good way just to really pivot, you know, more directly into Raquel. Because I know last time we kicked off with that moment in Vegas, and I'm still just a little bit drawn to that moment in the bed where Lala says, I wouldn't trust you around my man when drunk. Raquel's response to that. I think what was so interesting to me about that moment, and hopefully my intention is that if we can kind of go back in this moment with some specificity, and then it will help us kind of spiral outward into the kind of the larger affair and what's sort of organizing around that. But what I remember of that moment was Lala saying to Raquel, I would never trust you around my man when drunk. There's this clip. Well, by the time this gets released, the episode will have already aired. We're recording it before the episode is aired, but there's a clip of a preview of a scene on the forthcoming episode where Charlie has heard from Katie that Raquel made out with Schwartz at the wedding, and Charlie is confronting her about that and basically saying that's not cool. And I just bring that up because I have a very similar experience of both those moments where Lala's saying, I wouldn't trust you around my man when drunk, Charlie saying, it's not cool that you kiss Schwartz. It's kind of two similar messages. It's like naming something in Raquel. Like, you're kind of doing something here that's a little, you know, it's not trustworthy. It's around other people's men. There's a lack of trust here. And both times, but especially with the Lala moment, when I take Raquel in, like, to me, I feel it lands. Like, it hits her. And just from an empathic standpoint, I can feel something happens inside her when she says that. And it's almost like if I kind of slowed down to feel it, I mean, one, yeah, it definitely feels like something's getting called out here. That's true for me. And I feel the shame of that, of like, you know, if I'm Raquel, even if it's unconscious, like some part of me knows there's truth in this. And some part of me knows this is something I can get annihilated over. This is something that I do potentially that's bad or wrong or does make me not trustable. And it's almost like what comes to me is there's a vulnerability in that. Like, it's vulnerable to have that scene. I imagine she would spend most of her life doing everything to cover this part of her, right? So there's a vulnerability in it being named. And it's almost like, again, slowing this down, it's almost like the experience of vulnerability, I can also feel this like rage that starts to flare up in her. It's like, I feel the vulnerability of something getting named. And then in that place, I'm like, something's flaring up in me. I'm feeling it right now. It's like whatever usually underground impulse there is in Raquel to kind of like take up for herself or to defend herself or to like lash out, I can feel it kind of flaring up. But then what happens for me as Raquel is like there's this flare of emotion. It's multifaceted. And then I can just feel, and I saw it happen on TV. It's like, it's almost like if I put words to it from her body or her nervous system, it's like, we're not allowed to have all of this energy. Like, the energy itself, kind of going back to last time, is a threat somehow to my existence or to my being. And it's almost like I just feel it start, like her energy just starts to leave her body. So it's this really quick experience of like, something's happening here. I'm having an emotional response. Again, it's multifaceted. And like, alert, 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 pull the escape hatch. Like, we gotta like go and yeah, to the little escape vessel and launch off into outer space where the stars are projected on my ceiling. And so then what's so interesting to me though is like, she's leaving her body and then you watch her come up with this comeback. And it's so interesting because the way she does it, she's in Raquel mode where, yes, she doesn't feel embodied. Her voice is high. She's fumbling for the words. She can barely put the sentence together, right? But then the sentence she puts together is this like cutting comeback where she says, it's a good thing you don't have a man around. And you almost see like the other women on the bed. It's like, because she's fumbling to put it together, it's almost like, there's a moment where it takes them a beat to even register what she said. And then they register it and their eyes go wide and they're like, they're in disbelief. They're just like, Raquel, how could you even say something like that? And I guess I'm just bringing this in because to me, it's just such a kind of micro moment of, and I don't even know if I would call it a split in this moment, but just that multidimensional experience of both shutting something down, leaving the body, but then also that like, existent drive to win or to have the last word or to defend herself and feeling how awkward and clumsy it is in her. And the reason why I'm bringing this in is I have specific things to say in response to what you just said about like different messages she may have been getting from like different environments. And I want to bring that in specifically in terms of Vanderpump Rules itself. But I'm just curious, do you have anything to say in response to what I just said?
Yeah, I do, because I think I'm experiencing it just slightly different, which I think is interesting. And I'd love to maybe find out a little bit more about that energy. So when you say she leaves, what I, for some reason, the way I experience it as you're naming it, it's like, it's not okay, right? She's getting the message. This isn't okay to whatever's happening, whatever expression that's coming isn't okay. And there, for me, it's like a backpedaling, like an automatic backpedaling that goes back deep into herself. And that's the place where I feel like she makes contact with something cruel. Like it's fumbly because maybe that's where you're saying maybe that is where the energy splits off and leaves, but I don't feel her outside of herself. I feel her go back way into herself, which is different for me. Mm-hmm. And that is where she grabs something that has a little like a punch to it and that it's fed off of something that she's learned how to do. You know, like it's like I'm going to come back with a zinger. I'm gonna hurt you.
Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways we're saying the same thing. So in hearing you say that, for me, the way I take that in is I feel it as like both at the same time. And so maybe like this is where the split is because I do. I mean, that's what you're speaking to. I think that's the flare up I'm feeling. And it is this thing of like, again, it hits, it hurts. And I feel this thing in her that's like pissed. And I feel it with Charlie too. Like when Charlie says that, basically says like, I forget exactly what the words is, but like it's distasteful. I can feel something in Raquel that wants to pounce. But I'm curious about your experience of the backpedaling because I think there's something interesting there. And I know you really kind of held her experience in Vegas as kind of like, hey, Raquel, we're welcoming you in. We're inviting you in. We're okay with what's happening with Oliver. Oops, here's like a little sucker punch. That she experiences like a mixed message and that for you, that would kind of be like a trigger for the rage. It's interesting because when I kind of hold the Charlie moment, I still sort of experience it in a similar way where it's like Charlie's calling her out for something or naming something. And as Raquel, I mean, it's different, right? Because Charlie didn't invite her specifically into something, right? But there's something here about...
Let me see if this helps you, Jamie, because this is what I was feeling as Charlie. It's like, as your friend, I want to stay your friend and I'm going to tell you this was fucked up. So I'm not judging you, but there's so much judgment here. you know? So I just, as Charlie, I sort of feel her mixed message.
Okay.
In the, this is for you. I'm really doing this in a way that's trying to help you. But I think there's an undercurrent in Charlie that also gets a little, I don't know. I think she gets a little lit up in the same way that maybe there's some covert something going on there that might activate Raquel. Like you said, there's no invitation.
It's so interesting. I agree with you. I wasn't consciously aware of that. When you're saying it, it feels so true and right. And I actually love Charlie, but like that feels true. Because the reason why I also really agree with you, because where I was sort of going with this is I almost experienced as Raquel something around like, you're supposed to be my friend. Like this is supposed to be a safe space somehow. And so what I hear you saying is even though Charlie's naming something in a way that on the surface has compassion in it, there's also kind of an underground wall in it. It's not like, for example, hypothetically, pulling Raquel aside off camera and being, hey, look, there's something I'm picking up on. I'm concerned for you as your friend. I want you to know you can tell me anything. Like, I'm not going to judge you. Like, let's just get honest and clear with each other. You know what I mean? It's not kind of like, hey, let me invite you into a safe space where I'm willing to hold space for all your complexity and where you may have come from. It's kind of like, kind of going off your description of it, which feels really true for me. It's like, I'm bringing something in. I'm naming it really kind of gently, but there's a line and there's a wall here, which in hindsight, it feels good because we now know that Raquel was doing things behind the scenes that were really destructive, right? But I can really take in what you're bringing in here, which is, again, if Raquel obviously is sort of a stranger to her own negative intention and is just sort of lost in her own kind of ecosystem of mixed messages and confusion, and if she's experienced the world as a hostile place, especially from other women, and then she's got this friend who she's thinking of as a safe space, who's kind of saying, you better toe the line, Raquel. I'm cool with you as long as dot, dot, dot. I'm cool with you at the expense of these other parts of yourself that you've always had to drive underground. And now I'm reinforcing that message. And I'm telling you, you're fucked up if you do this. I can kind of see that flare up happening.
Exactly. Because from that place, here is a friend basically saying, I know what's best, as opposed to, hey, can we talk about what's going on for you? If I'm bringing something problematic to a friend, I'm bringing it from a perspective that knows it's a perspective of mine, and that there's maybe a way that I could ask my friend if she's aware of how this is going down, what it is that she feels towards Katie. I would be more curious, I guess, about Raquel's experience before I kind of just smattered on top of it like this is not cool.
Right.
With me.
And I think this is why I brought all this in the first place, because I'm just thinking about mixed messages, right? And I was just thinking about sort of that,
exactly,
that clumsy way that Raquel kind of brought in that cutting insult. And she did it again when she left Lake Havasu. She, like, again, it was so clumsy the way that she was like, well, Lala, he liked me more. And I was just thinking about these warring or these confused, discombobulated parts of Raquel. And I was like, you know, because you mentioned this element of punishment, like perhaps part of why she was passive aggressively playing something out with Oliver was to punish Lala for her power play of talking about cheating with James. And Raquel's mentioned also, like, look, Katie and I were never close. I don't remember if there was actually specific instances of meanness from Katie towards Raquel. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if there were. But, you know, it suddenly just got me thinking, it's like, here we possibly have this young woman, you know, who, if she were in, like, let's say the pageant world or in her family of origin, perhaps, yeah, cultivated a persona that was incredibly nice, that was incredibly polite, that played by the rules, right? And it's just interesting to think about. And then she gets onto this show, which is a whole different beast. And I think to your implicit point, she's greeted by a lot of women who are actively hostile towards her, who are actively mean towards her, who are insulting her around her helplessness, where the currency of the show is being willing to, like, throw shade, clap back, fire back insults. And, you know, it got me wondering, would the Raquel of 5 years ago even tried for the insult? is she now kind of looking around, seeing what works in this universe? And I want to be clear, I'm not saying she doesn't have that in her. I think she has it in her, and I think she's had to disown it. And so now it's kind of like, okay, well, let me try to claim some of this, you know what I mean? To earn my spot in this hierarchy or to defend myself in this hierarchy. And again, it just, to me, it kind of speaks to this possible experience of like, because you were saying before, who am I without these things? When we talked about last episode, like I was sort of led to invest in certain personas or certain narratives. Now, you know, the relationship with James is over. Pageants are over. I've got the show. I've got the fame. But like, I sort of feel like I've got, like this all went nowhere. And on some level, I'm agitated and pissed about this. And meanwhile, people are being cruel and mean to me. Like, I'm not getting anything from what I've tried before. So now let me try, you know, again, like single Raquel. Let me try to explore with some of these other energies that may have been forbidden that I see these other women exploring with, perhaps doing it really clumsily. And then again, somehow I'm getting penalized for it.
I wanted to ask you, Jamie, like when you feel into Raquel in these like, you know, clapbacks that are really clumsy, do you have a sense of age? Like, do you have a sense of how old you feel?
I mean, I don't know. The first number I heard was 5.
It's so interesting because when we were touching on sexuality on the last episode, and I think I was talking about the immaturity that I felt because you were kind of naming her as this, you know, seductress and this sort of dark sexual energy. And I was like, it just doesn't feel mature to me. Neither does her sort of coming out, bringing her rage out. It feels really young to me. And five is young, but it almost feels like it started out when she first started on the show, even younger than that, where you could see her get like flustered and she couldn't even have a thought because Lala is just right there so quick, you know, clapping back and moving things forward. It's like, I'm so frustrated. I can't even put a sentence together. And now at least it's like, she's kind of feels like she's more like 8 or 10 and like, oh yeah, this is what people say when it's here and I'm going to try that on. Again, it feels performative, but it feels like it's trying to mature itself. It's trying to bring an energy forward that says, hey, this isn't okay. And I haven't been able to say that before.
Well, and it's funny because even when she clapped back at Lala at that pool party at Sandoval and Ariana's house, it's like her insult was something that I just kind of felt like she mimicked Lala. Like, what did she call her? She was like, you're a Bambi mistress or like a bimbo mistress or something like that. She said something like that. Like, you're just a bimbo. It felt like a regurgitation of things Lala had actually said to her. So again, that's kind of what I'm saying. It's almost like there's an element of I'm mimicking what I'm seeing and trying to hang with the crowd. Mm-hmm. And then again, kind of like getting penalized for it and getting all these mixed messages about what's okay and what's not okay.
I see like an image of her scratching, like being the type of teenager that scratched out the faces of girls she didn't like, you know, in her yearbook. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to erase them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Just feels young.
If we sort of let this lead the way into, I guess, the Schwartz of it all. And, you know, like I said last time, the whole situation with Oliver was so interesting because it was like, yes, she asked permission. Yes, she sort of cleared it. But at the same time, when I think about that dinner, literally Katie was sitting there saying, Katie had said that previously, please don't do this. Her mother was crying. And then that's the dinner that she chooses to sort of go forward with, like poaching Oliver from Lala, which to me just feels a little, again, like if you're going to be a femme fatale and if you're going to be this passive aggressive vixen, it seems like kind of a clumsy, way to go about it. It seems kind of like you're tipping your hand, which to me, there's always this question of like her degree of consciousness of what she's doing. But if we let that spiral outward just towards Schwartz in general, it is interesting because Katie has made a very clear plea to her to back off. I mean, first of all, just even predating that, the way Raquel brought this in of like sitting at dinner with Lala and Katie and being like, well, yeah, I mean, I have thought about making out with Schwartz. Or yeah, I did ask Schwartz if he wanted to make out. And it's like she's wielding this so plainly, right? As if she has no awareness of the potential impact. And then Katie says to her, please, like, this actually does have an impact on me. And we even, I think, at one point hear Raquel to Ariana, of all people, say, oh, when Katie kind of made that plea, I actually felt bad. So she indicated some level of awareness of impact in that moment and some level of remorse, regardless of what degree that was authentic or not. She at least knew enough to say that. But then she then goes ahead and does make out with Schwartz anyway. And to her point, like, she's confronted about it with Charlie and kind of doesn't really take in what Charlie's saying and immediately pivots to, well, if you're curious about whether we're dating, we're not, which really seems besides the point. It's not really going into the meat of what happened, which is you chose to make out with this woman's very recent ex-husband. And I'll just sort of fill in some of the blanks. Even after she made an explicit, you know, request of you to sort of drop this and leave this. And so, I don't know, I'm just curious, like, is there anything that leaps out to you in terms of Raquel, how she's orienting towards this thing with Schwartz and what that sort of may or may not reveal just about her whole energetic relationship to other people's men?
Well, yeah. I think what I would say, first and foremost, I'm super conscious of the fact that this was filmed. It was like they went off to another little part of the area where cameras had to like go, and they're very conscious of the fact that there are cameras on them. It's not like they're tucked away somewhere. They're like front, and it's a really open place where you can see everybody seeing them. So cameras are on them. All the people at the party are doing it. For me, it felt super staged. Mm-hmm. It felt very much a performative act. There was something really giggly about it, like between both of them. It wasn't like, oh, I can't keep my hands off you, you know, that we're just like impassioned and we can't stop ourselves. It felt very orchestrated. It felt very performative. And I didn't buy anything about it. She's like, yeah, Sheena mentioned this thing. It's in her head. Katie's not around, supposedly. But you know it's going to get back. This isn't something that you're just going to do and nobody's ever going to know about it.
Right.
I'm doing this and I know that something's coming.
Right.
It just feels performative.
So I guess then, I mean, which is how this whole situation has felt from the very beginning of the season when they were talking about making out. Now, Schwartz did say something in the last episode that I believe and I think is very kind of telling as to sort of his underlying his underlying landscape. But, you know, he said something, right, I think about doing it in part to get back at Katie or, you know, to get under her skin, like he did it specifically. I don't know if he used these exact words, but he said something about to do it to make her angry or that there was a defiance to it. Like, you don't get to tell me who I can and cannot make out with. So that there was like a fuck you there for him. So I'm sure, to me, I believe it could be both things at once. That, yeah, this generates a story for the show. And it's also kind of like a fuck you to Katie. And then I was wondering if there might be something there for Raquel as well. I am just sort of suddenly hearing the words like, yeah, you're not going to tell me what to do. It doesn't feel as charged towards Katie as it would with Schwartz. Like, I don't know that she has actual beef towards Katie. But I think what I'm aware of and what I want to bring into all this is, like, let's just say, you know, and I agree with you, it does sort of all seem kind of a pretense for the show and generating story for the show. But that's still a choice that Raquel is making, because Katie has sat there and said, look, this has an impact on me. And so regardless of whether she has feelings for Schwartz or not, I mean, in a way, it's almost worse. It's almost kind of like, I don't even have real feelings for this guy. I'm doing this to generate story for the show, and I am completely disregarding the fact that this actually has an impact on you. And I guess I just get curious about that part of her, because it's like, I'm curious about your experience of it, because when I say this, it's almost like, how do I put language to what I'm experiencing in my body? I get the sense, it's almost like she's letting herself gloss over something inside of herself. It's like Schwartz said, I did this in a way to say to Katie, you don't get to tell me what to do. I don't get the feeling that Raquel's consciously connected to something inside of her that says, yeah, like Katie made this request and I don't fucking care. It's almost like
she just lets whatever that voice would be or that awareness would be, she just lets it, like, she just glides by it. It's like she's in a moving car and she's looking out the window, and that could be like a train station stop, like the stop that says, like, conscious awareness of, like, you know, sticking it to Katie or not giving a fuck. And it's like she just lets it go by the window.
It's a blur.
Yeah, like she's not even connected to that. That's how it initially lands in me somehow. Like, I'm not even going to let myself know. It's bringing me back to when we talked last time about what I'm experiencing as her learned helplessness, the part of her that, like, I don't know how to do laundry, I don't know how to microwave. And I kind of felt like this feels on some level like a willful act of not knowing. That's kind of how it feels to me. Like, I'm just, I don't even want to let myself know the place inside that doesn't give a shit that I'm doing this.
Yes. And I think that, so what's happening for me as you're talking about this, James is coming into the picture for me. And the recent sort of news about Lala and James having something happen at the beginning of their thing, like that there's somehow this looseness around who hooks up with who and how. Like, that's kind of been in the vernacular for a while. So-and-so, Jax and Tom and everybody, when they go to Vegas, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. All, you know, just the whole rhetoric around the way they're sort of, they're young, they're loose, maybe. There's something about, if there's any sort of punishment here, I don't really feel it towards Katie. I feel she's upset about James moving on so quickly. James is there with his girlfriend. I think she's kind of like, fuck it. If I'm going to be in the when in Rome type, if I'm going to hang out with sharks, I better start swimming like a shark, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying it on. Just kind of like, I don't know if this is who she's ever been before, but she's certainly like, hey, I'm single Raquel. That's what single Raquel does.
Mm-hmm.
Tom's single too. Never mind what Katie says.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's almost like, because I was thinking, it's like, what would it mean for her to even get in touch with the voice that says, screw Katie, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? And then I realized, well, there's even a little bit of self-responsibility in that. Again, I just keep going back to, like, don't know how to do laundry, don't know how to microwave. It's almost like if I just mm-hmm. bypass that voice in me, I almost get to play this. Like, oh, I just don't know what I'm doing. Again, this would never be conscious, right? But like to give voice, like I'm just trying to hang out with what's the metaphor? The big boys and girls. I'm trying to, like, you know, this is the major leagues. I'm just trying to do what everyone else does. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just, you know what I mean? It's just like this kind of like systematic denial of any kind of, yeah, I don't know how to microwave things. What, you mean I'm not supposed to have sex on the counters? Like, just this kind of, it's like I get to play this role where I don't ever have to, yeah, take ownership of what I'm doing somehow.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I feel her more, what you were talking about earlier, on the outside of herself somehow. Like, she's not actually connecting with herself and saying, this is what I want. This is what I want to do. I don't feel like she's, I just feel like somebody has her strings and she's just kind of filling it in, you know, animating what some other puppet master has created for her. Sure, I'll step into this. Why not? Let's just see what happens.
And it does kind of feel like, if I sort of feel in that moment with Charlie, it's like I do get the sense if she were to maybe drop into herself and just maybe connect with some voice that says, like, yeah, I'm doing something that, it's just like the voice that I suddenly hear, you know, to everything that we're saying is kind of like, yeah, why does one set of rules apply to everyone else and then like a different set of rules apply to me somehow?
Absolutely. Yes. That's the question I feel like, I don't know if she said that out loud, but that's my read on her. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Like, Lala gets to sleep with James. Lala gets to be with, like, a married man. To your point, like, everyone gets to act out in this circle. And yet, for some reason, Raquel does it. And I'm, like, branded with the Scarlet A. And so it feels like, if we're talking about pattern in history, it just sort of feels like it feeds into whatever underground resentment there would be around some sort of early messaging of, like, whatever applies to the people over here does not apply to you. Mm-hmm. You just better shut up and look pretty. You don't have a say in all this, little girl. And as you were talking to, the other thing that came to me, it's almost like Vanderpump Rules is its own pageant world.
Oh, totally. Yes, the whole process around their uniform. That's just all of it. Like, yes.
It's like sort of like a grotesque horror pageant. Pageantry of the grotesque, you know what I mean? Where we're like, I mean, I don't even know what it is they're flaunting and I don't know what the competition is, but it's just this sort of three-ring circus of like flagrant sexuality and negative intentions and power and fame or like whatever it is. But it feels like, yeah, it's like it's a circus that's put on for public consumption and it's a spectacle and it's who comes out on top and who wins and who loses. And it's definitely a competition for sure.
And Lisa Vanderpump, I mean, the puppet master.
Well, you know, I want to get into Lisa Vanderpump soon.
We'll have to do that another time. Yeah,
I know. It's so funny. I've never gone there and I'm really feeling ready lately. And I love what you brought in our phone conversation lately of maybe an angle of what's between Lisa and Kristen. Because the more that I watch old seasons of Vanderpump Rules, I am so drawn to Kristen in all of this. Mm. I find her fascinating. Because she really, I mean, this is about Raquel, but I will just say, you know, she knew some stuff and she completely set herself up to be discounted with the way she went about things. I was watching an older episode. You talk about how sometimes you kind of like see these people when they're young or you hear them when they're young or you hear the things they're saying and it just, you can sort of feel them as a kid. And it's not that she said anything, but it was just that energy of her wanting to expose things and being this lone voice who says, wait, like Tom was a cheater or Lisa Vanderpump does this stuff that's fucked up and I want people to know. And I don't know, I could just feel this energy of the kid who's like, I'm trying to get something seen and heard here that no one will see or hear. And like it driving her bonkers.
And that woman has so much energy too. So can you imagine being thwarted at every attempt to prove, you know, that what she sees as what's happening gets diverted back and used against her. I had a love-hate relationship with her, you know, too, from what I remember back. I don't even remember everything, but I just remember how problematic her behavior was.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, being told you're crazy. And I mean, literally her nickname on the show is Crazy Kristen. And I just, again, from a place of pattern, I just have to imagine she has some older relationship to being labeled crazy for what she's seeing. And so just feeling into how, you know, you get labeled as crazy. And then it's like, I don't know. This is what I want to, I mean, we got to get back to Raquel, but this is what I want to explore with you, where that track changes to where she starts actually acting crazy. And then that gives people the ammunition to call her crazy. Because that's really what Tom and Ariana did. It's like, she was acting crazy. And they use that as leverage to say, Kristen, the things you're saying about us aren't true. Look at how you're acting. You're crazy. But she was tapped into deeper truth about what was going on with them. But her presentation, her style was so unhinged that she undermined herself. And so I'm so drawn to just... And then this is the last thing I'll say, but if we're going to frame this in terms of Lisa Vanderpump, Lisa Vanderpump is like the complete inversion of that, right? Because Lisa knows how to keep her cards close to her chest. She knows how to arrange the chess piece. I mean, she should mentor Kristen because she's got a refinement and a self-possession and an ability to kind of like know how and when to pull back that Kristen could really use, you know? But I feel like Kristen is everything Lisa Vanderpump in a lot of ways would never be. Like, she's just this messy live wire who just like makes a mess out of fucking everything. Whereas Lisa Vanderpump, she is the ringmaster. And I think this is the last thing I'll say. I mean, I guess we're giving a preview into whenever this episode will happen. But, you know, Lisa, I think also, I'm sure Kristen would be triggering for Lisa because she can't be controlled. If Lisa's the ringmaster in the circus and all these people are her animals, you know how she loves her animals, Kristen is the one who can't be tamed. And she's not going to stay in her cage. And she's not going to be the good dog, you know, who does the tricks she's supposed to perform. She's like a live wire.
And she's going to spoil the rest of the training that's going on. If you have something unpredictable and you've really set the stage for something else to happen, you don't have control over that. And you would think that Lisa would kind of like that in terms of the show. But I think, I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to explore that because I think she's invested in something for sure in these people in a very personal way.
Mm-hmm.
Like you use the word mentoring. I think she sees herself as a mentor. I think they look to her as one. And I'm kind of interested in that, in the cultish way that we look at things.
And also, like, I will say too, you know, I've liked Lisa more this season than I've ever liked her. Like, I actually felt like the way that she is mentoring Ariana and Katie, it actually felt good to me. I actually was like, oh, you feel genuinely supportive of them. And you feel genuinely supportive of them as, like, women entrepreneurs. And I don't know, I think I'm so used to feeling, and I'm sure there are probably conditions attached, but I think I'm so used to feeling her love expressed in this controlling way that kind of cuts people down while it also builds them up. And this was the, I don't know, it was just the most I've ever felt it kind of like, no, I actually really want to build you up. And it's just, there's a lot there I want to explore. I really also want to explore her relationship to women. Yeah, there's just a lot. There's a lot here. So coming back to Raquel. So, you know, we've kind of established this thing with Schwartz is for the show. She's trying to kind of hang with the big dogs. Her identity is feeling more lost than ever. She's sort of scattered across the ceiling like her projector lights. And so obviously, yeah, you know, she starts this relationship with Sandoval. And as I mentioned up top of the first episode on this, I think part of what's been so distressing to people, of course, is the fact that she was really close with Ariana. And, you know I've now spoken to aspects of this, both in Instagram videos and then my first episode about Scandoval. So I'm aware of not wanting to repeat myself too much, but I think certainly we've addressed, you know, where she might feel competition with other women. Certainly we've addressed perhaps some sort of sense of power and charge around disempowering the woman of the house and a voice in her that feels, yeah, like a place where she feels powerful by seducing the man of the house into her bedroom behind the back of the woman of the house. I've talked about also the charge she might get out of sort of duping another woman, like a trusting woman, like, oh, you're the one who's like the pathetic, dumb, helpless one. I'm actually the one who's got secret power here. So these are all different threads that could sort of be living in her choice to sleep with Ariana's man under her nose. And having said all that, I know part of what's so disturbing about this whole situation for people is the fact that they were close friends and that Ariana was really nice to her. I mean, you know, I don't know all the specifics, but it really sounds like they took her in. It sounds like she was living in their house for a certain period of time. Tom and Ariana literally went to her beauty pageants to cheer her on. Raquel herself has called Ariana like a sister, I think, in certain interviews. Like, there was a closeness there. And Ariana took her in. And so then there's this choice that Raquel makes to be having a 7-month-long love affair with Tom behind Ariana's back. Because much in the same way that Tom could have said, you know what, I'm not sort of doing anything until I have a talk with Ariana and leave this relationship. Raquel could have said, Tom, I have feelings for you. And if you want to have a relationship with me, you got to like do it clean and go end this with Ariana, right? Obviously, she didn't do that. So I guess I'm just bringing in on a bigger level, you know, I think a question that's on a lot of people's minds around how is Raquel orienting towards what she's doing and the fact that she's conducting this secret affair with the man of one of her best friends and how she orients to that inside of herself and how she could live with herself, let's say. And like I said, I feel like I've already touched on some things, but I'm curious if there's anything that just even comes up for you just off the top in terms of her carrying this secret from someone who's been very kind to her.
I think I'll go back to what you said earlier about it not even really registering like a sign that just goes by. I really can't feel her considering Ariana at all. There's just something about the way, like if I'm feeling it as though I can't even think about that. Like, I'm not going to think about that. Like, I just imagine them sort of behind the scenes. I just have this feeling that they're not, like, this is just an escape, you know, like somehow this is just them, like in this own, almost like I feel it like in a little protected weird space that's like a fantasy thing, and they're acting like you said they were in disguise or something. Like, I don't mm-hmm. know. It just feels so, so weird to me. But I don't imagine her saying, "Hey, I really am having a hard time with this relationship. I'm not okay being the mistress." Like, I just don't feel that from her.
What do you feel?
Kind of like just this. This is fun. Tom is very engaged with me. Like, he has a way of making me feel really special somehow. You know, he's a good-looking guy. He's charismatic. I'm sure he thinks he is, like, cool. Like, he's got that factor. James kind of had that too, right? Like, to me, they feel a little similar in that way. And I think she likes that type of guy, like charismatic somehow that they, you know, she gets attention for being with them. But I feel her more into really like, we look really good together. You know, like I, for some reason, it feels very much around the way they look and interact out.
Well, we saw she wouldn't even walk down the aisle with Schwartz because his walk was not up to par.
Oh my God. That was the cherry. Like for me, that was so clearly Raquel.
What came to me as you were speaking, I think it can't be underestimated, especially if she's having an experience of feeling cruelty from a lot of people in this world. Tom's nice to her. Tom Sandoval, like showing her actual appreciation and adoration. I'm sure that's probably going a long way in her mind.
Mm-hmm. I can even imagine him sort of feeding that insecure part of her, whatever insecurity she has there, that like I've replaced someone.
Mm-hmm.
I have been the replacement
mm-hmm.
at all cost. And something goes underground.
Which is what?
I think it's that darker, that cruelty, that winter place. Like, it feels like it's underneath there. But I see her playing it off. Like, I agree. You said something before about the secrecy of it, the way that they were getting away with something. Like, I could see that being part of it, that it's fun, but I don't feel that it was like talked about in terms of what this secret actually meant if it were to be found out, like a disassociation from that.
Well, you had also said to me after last week's episode, you said something specifically about Raquel's darkness and seeing it last episode. Do you remember what you were responding to?
I think it had something to do with when they came back after making out, like a bunch of people were hanging out. And after the kiss, I feel like she was there. Is that true?
She was there was another room after they made out. And like Tom and Ariana was there. And that's where Tom was kind of like, Raquel, Raquel. And Ariana was saying, Tom, why do you keep saying, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And I was just, again, with that question, like, you know, were Tom Sandoval and Raquel together at this point? And if so, that's where I was like, oof, man, she's just like smoke coming in.
What was so interesting to me about that moment, though, was you could actually, I think, see some of her discomfort. Like he made that joke about here's Schwartz's room key and threw it at her. And Ariana said, oh, Tom, that's like that joke is gross. And you see Raquel saying, yeah, it's gross. And you can kind of tell she's not happy with it. And there's also been a lot of like dissection online where if you look closely, when Tom says something about like, oh, we're all going to have fun now, you can actually tell he's smacking Raquel in the ass. And again, you kind of see her
have... Oh, in that room?
Yeah. And you kind of see her have a reaction to it. And I say that because it's interesting because these are little places where I noticed Raquel possibly having discomfort with Sandoval and how he's behaving towards her. And part of the story of Ariana finding out. Well, I guess now there's conflicting stories. What I had heard, I believe this to be true. Someone recently told me they heard something different. But what I had heard was that what Ariana discovered on Tom's phone was a FaceTime call between
Tom and Raquel where they were both masturbating. And apparently Tom had recorded it. And the word on the street is, if this is true, that he recorded it without Raquel's permission, which obviously is a violation. So I'm just mentioning it because it's like, I'm just sort of bringing in these little places where it feels like Raquel has had to compromise boundaries with Tom. And that clearly, even though they're presenting this as one thing or she's saying it's maybe one thing, you can already see that this part of her that on some level is sort of desperate to have this or desperate to keep him or like puts a lot of value in this relationship, I'm sure much like with James and much like with every other relationship in her life, she's willing to override stuff in herself for the sake of his love and his approval. And it's not surprising, but I think it's telling and I think it's interesting. And, you know, it kind of says a lot about where she's coming from in all of this. To my point, she's not someone, I mean, I hear you saying she's not even conscious of this, but like, I don't think she's someone who ever would draw a firm line in the sand with Tom to say, hey, these are going to be the terms of our relationship. It's like, no, there's something in her that's saying, I'm getting something from this that I need. And if there's something in me that isn't comfortable with everything, I better fucking override that because I want to keep this guy around and however he's feeding me.
Exactly. That's where I feel the parallel between Tom and James with Raquel. Like, she's not actually getting, I don't think she knows what she fully wants at this point. But I think, like you said, she is used to somehow having problematic relationships that she just sort of overrides whatever problems are there for her and takes what is there to get what she's getting.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I did just quickly drop into Raquel towards Ariana and all this of kind of like, if I put myself in Raquel's shoes and I'm having this affair and I'm looking at Ariana, what am I feeling? And it was kind of like what came to me as a possibility. It's kind of like, yeah, you're nice. Like, it really was this feeling of like, the woman's never going to come through for me in a real way. It's like, the man's the one who's going to keep me safe. Like, the man's the one who's going to, like, I can't. I want to be clear because we're talking about mixed messages from women and female betrayal. It's not that I see her looking at Ariana and thinking you're going to screw me over. With Ariana, it's more of a sense of, it's not that you're going to screw me over. It's just that you, I don't trust you actually have agency or power enough to come through for me. Like, you're not a safe space in the same way that a man and male energy is a safe space is, and it's going to come through for me. And it's almost like a feeling of like, at the end of the day, if I am thrown into the lion's den with the vipers, Ariana, like, you're not, you don't have what it takes to come through for me. Like, I don't trust you. Not from, again, not from a place of, I don't trust you. Like, you're going to do something bad to me. It's like, I just don't trust you to be the safety that I need. I don't feel safety with women, whether that is like because they pose a threat to me, they're going to screw me over, or whether just because I don't have like an ingrained sense of a woman as like, yeah, a strong mode of agency and power who can come through for me in a way that holds me and protects me and keeps me safe. That's what the guy does. So, you know, you can't see me at home. I'm kind of throwing up my hands. So like, sorry. And it doesn't feel like this voice. I do think there are other aspects where I do think there was something kind of like taking something out against Ariana as the woman in the house. But this particular voice, it doesn't even feel like charged towards her. It's just like, this is just kind of the way it is. And I got to do what I got to do. Like, you're kind of just like, unfortunately, you're kind of like a casualty in all of this.
Exactly. At all costs.
It's complicated.
I'm not even going to let myself register the cost.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like you're speaking to, I think you're picking up on what I was talking about of like the passing sign in the window. There's a way in which it just feels like she can let things blow by like tumbleweeds without even registering it. Whereas I feel like with a lot of other people or like me, for example, it's like you can kind of have a semi-conscious awareness of something. Like, there's a pang there that maybe you're aware of, but you kind of like turn a blind eye to it. Whereas with her, it feels like she truly just knows how to let it roll past on the other side of the window without even like, it just doesn't hit any part of her gut. Like, it's kind of like what I was talking about before. Like, she can just kind of leave her body and not even register these deeper hits of like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, or maybe there's something off here, or you know what I'm saying?
I do, because I was just kind of reflecting as you were talking about a time when James and her were together and James was friends with Lala and they were drinking a lot. And I don't remember where it was. It was somewhere like by a pool or something. And she was like, I don't know. The impression I had was like, you know, this looks weird that your Lala's sitting on your lap or that you guys are really touchy a lot. And it was almost not like this is a problem for me. It's just a problem. And I need to say something, but I'll overlook it. I just like stop doing it in public kind of a thing. I don't know. It's like, I just imagine her, even with, if somebody cheated on her, that she would forgive them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't even, like it's just, okay, just don't tell anybody. I don't know. I just feel her as someone that just wouldn't even, I see her as someone who could be cheated on and let that go.
Well, then let me bring in this final piece into this, because this is another thing that people are really talking about a lot, which is just, you know, since this whole thing is broken, there's been a lot of talk about her seeming lack of remorse. And so, like, there have been some staged paparazzi moments where she's given little interviews. And when you see her give the interview, there is a kind of, like, almost smirk on her face, and she's kind of laughing. There's been reports she did not shed a single tear at the reunion. And then also, I know, like, this whole, you know, there was this whole kind of, you may not have even heard about this, but there was this whole, she said, basically, she took out a restraining order against Sheena. Because I guess when Sheena found out, so Ariana found out about the affair on like a Wednesday night. Sheena and Raquel were on Watch What Happens Live that night in New York. They finished taping, they're out. Ariana, I guess, calls Sheena and says, I just found this video. Tom and Raquel have been having an affair. Sheena hangs up the phone, says to Raquel, basically like, you've been having this affair with Tom. Raquel says, yes. What Sheena says is that Raquel did not register any emotion. She looked in her eyes. She saw no remorse. She saw no regret. Like there were no tears. It was sort of like just looking into like a, I guess like a dead Stepford wife's eyes. And Sheena was just saying that to me was just, it, that was what was so enraging. And I guess at that point, maybe Raquel kind of like grabbed Sheena's wrist and something just sort of popped in Sheena and she kind of like flung her off her or something. Which apparently, I mean, this is according to Sheena, Raquel then repurposed that into Sheena punched me. And as a result of being punched, took out a restraining order against her, which she then later dropped. That's kind of neither here nor there. The point that I'm saying is there's this theme amongst the cast members and also the general public of Raquel doesn't seem to have any remorse. And if anything, she seems to sort of smirk and laugh and she never cries and she never seems contrite. And so I just kind of wanted to bring that into this because it is another thing that a lot of people are asking about. And I think in a lot of ways, probably, I mean, I think probably we've already spoken to it in different ways, just in terms of like underground pleasure, power, also like just the unwillingness to feel like the impact of things. But I'm also feeling something else here. For me, it's just this feeling of like essentially, kind of like what I was talking about in that moment with Lala. Something has been exposed here that is so vulnerable. And for me, if like I trust the intuitive information that's coming through, if I'm Raquel and if I have this feeling like my vulnerability is not safe, and especially in this situation, right? Like if I, you know, for better or for worse, this is a situation, and I've said this before on other podcasts, like it does, like Tom and Raquel could have both come out at this point with the most soul-searching, self-responsible, deeply remorseful statements and explanations of why they did, right? What they did. People aren't going to hear. They're still going to pick it apart, tear it apart, be like, oh, you fucker, you're making... Like, no one wants to hear it right now, right? So, you know, they're both in a situation. It does not matter. Like, they could say the sky is blue and people are going to, like, pounce on them, especially the cast members, and be like, you motherfucker, how dare you say that? Like, da-da-da-da-da. So for me, it's just like, if there is inherent vulnerability in what she's done, which there is, because obviously these choices came from somewhere deep inside of her, and if she already has a relationship to, like, mixed messages and being torn down, and it's kind of like, for me, it's like, yeah, if I have this feeling that my vulnerability in some way puts me in danger or harm's way, and I can't, like, to even have that sort of, yeah, puts me in danger, especially on this level, with the level of, like, vitriol that's coming toward me and wants to come towards me, it's kind of like, no fucking way am I giving you, like, the opportunity or the benefit of
me being in that vulnerable place where you can truly, I mean, I feel it two ways. One's the more vulnerable way of like, take me down here in a way that feels really kind of like I'm protecting myself. But then there's also the prideful way of like, I'm not giving you this opportunity to do more of what's been done to me. Oh, I really feel
that's
that.
That's what I feel.
Yeah, I really feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is what got me into the situation in the first place, somehow. Like, these mixed messages and, like, it not being safe for me to have my energy and, like, being set up. Like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it wasn't fair in the first place, which is what, like, you know, in some way enabled me to take what I felt was mine. Even if I'm disconnected from the power of this voice, that's what empowered me to do this. I'm not like giving you any fodder to do that even more to me. And it does somehow feel like then that feeds, like there is something inherently vulnerable in that. And that's where I start to feel the vulnerability. Like there is a deeper vulnerability here for her. And I do think that's threatening, but I think that's the deeper layer. And the layer on top of that, that's closer to the surface, the smirk, the smile is like, no, 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 no. It reminds me very much of Jen Shah or Erica Jane. It's just like, I already have this relationship to humiliation and shame. Like, you think you're going to see me down for the count? No fucking way. I don't care what's happening out there. I don't care what you want me to say about the victims of, Lion Air. Mm-hmm. You're not beating me while I'm down. It just feels like such a, like a covert pride thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's walking down the runway in painful heels and clothes. You know what I mean? Like, I just can feel the place that she has learned. This is a very practiced defense of, I don't have to feel this. I don't have to, and I won't. And I am not going to give you the pleasure or the satisfaction of dropping into that, especially if it's going to come at the cost, like you said, of whatever I bring out from dropping into something and then expressing from that place. If that just gets pushed back at me, forget it. I'm not going there. You're not going to make me. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, what's so interesting to me, I guess this is kind of the final thing I'll bring in. You know, as you know, I'm always looking at pattern. And it's just when I really take in the viciousness that got directed towards her in some of these early seasons, like from Lala and from some of the other women. And also now the voice of like vicious rage that's sort of being hurled at her from the collective. It really does make me curious about, was that same energetic force rearing its head like in her childhood and her upbringing? You know, was there this energy of vicious attack coming in from somewhere? You know, it's just something I mean, obviously, again, I know the pageant world can be very competitive and certainly quietly vicious.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I talked about this last time. The breakup with James had to do with some sort of screaming fight that he got into with her father. So even that, it's like, there's some clue about possible really intense energy that was in that home.
I just flashed on a conversation that was being had in the car on the way back from that trip with Lala and Katie and what's her name in the car. And they were talking about the breakup with James. And they asked, like, were you thinking about breaking up with them before? She was saying that she had thought about, like, while he was gone, she was just going to grab all of her stuff and go. Like, she was just going to leave the relationship without having a conversation. So that kind of, to me, also speaks to a way that she is orienting in relationship where she doesn't address things.
That's a really good point. And actually, what I was just going to say kind of connected to that, because I was talking about pattern of viciousness and vicious behavior. And then suddenly I was like, she was in this relationship with James, who's abusive. I feel like his energy is abusive. And I feel like we don't even see the worst of it.
Oh, I can feel it.
Yeah, no, he's got abusive energy. And again, which by the way, this leads me back to why it may have felt so good if suddenly something's developing with Tom and he's being nice to her. I mean, again, we're talking about layers, right? And we're talking about layers of things built upon each other and then built upon each other and then built upon each other. And it's like mixed messages. And so it's like, again, I'm just going hypothetically. Let's just say there was triangulation with the father. Let's say she was daddy's little girl. Let's say she got a lot of like positive feedback and love from him. And then let's say he also has a hair trigger temper
And so let's say on one hand, he's protecting her from maybe the hostile, competitive mom and sisters. But then if she does or says the wrong thing, his temper explodes. You know what I mean? It's like there's so much here. And so I just keep coming back to where we ended last episode of this notion of discombobulation and just all these different scattered parts in her and bringing in what we were talking about up top about covert messaging. But then there's also overt messaging. And then you just have this girl who, as we talked about last time, wasn't even wanted from the beginning, was a mistake, is handed off into this family. And it's just like, as I'm saying this, something's starting to happen. You can't see me at home, but it's like my head's spinning. Like I feel dizzy all of a sudden. And my eye, again, it's like the projector light. My eyes are going everywhere. It's like, I don't know how to make heads or tails of this. I feel like, what's those things called? Like a top? Like that you spin, like a Jewish dreidel. But like, what's that toy? Like a... You know what I'm talking about? Like you spin it and then it sort of spins on the surface of the table.
A top.
You know, like that's how I feel like it's Raquel. It's like I'm a top and I'm just kind of spinning. And it's kind of this feeling of like I can't ever fully land because none of this makes sense. And there's no room for what I would actually have to say and feel about this if I even knew how I felt about all of this. So let me just kind of keep spinning and... You know, the last thing I'll say, I mean, this in some ways feels like a very kind of obvious thing to say, but it's what I've just been sitting with this whole time that we've been recording today. It's just like, okay, you know, people want answers about Raquel. I feel like this is someone who is just so lost. Like she just feels so lost to me. And again, when I kind of like just put together the timeline of who she was in the past, having this pageant world, graduating from school, being 22 when she meets James, being brought into like, yeah, the vicious pageant circus of Vanderpump Rules, ending that relationship, losing the pageants, suddenly on her own at 27 in the adult world, having like internalized all this different stuff about all the different parts of herself. And she's sort of looking around again, going back to that card, who the fuck am I? And I've gone from one sheltered environment to another. And it's like, what the fuck do I do now? And I can't really trust anyone, let alone myself. But yeah.
Mm. Well, especially myself at this point. And you know, it's interesting. I was thinking as you were describing the top, it's like in that energy that needs to keep spinning, that needs to keep projecting, that needs to keep moving in order not to feel the antidote, of course, is to slow down, make contact with your ground, like let yourself topple, feel like she's gonna, what would bottom be for somebody like Raquel in the world of, if you were exploring addictive behaviors or if you were exploring behaviors that were highly unconscious, there needs to be kind of that confrontation that happens in order for you to really stop and take stock of, wait, these are the behaviors that have led to the place that I'm in right now. What part is mine? What is it that I am taking away from the experiences that I've had? And how can I do something different moving forward in relationship? So with her, I have a sense that she tends to be the victim in relationship somehow. Somehow she becomes the victor that gets out and moves on. Like somehow that's some expression of her power there. But there's no real sort of, hey, who was I in this relationship? Deep, deep reflection of this is what my patterns were. These were the things that I did in hindsight. This is what I would choose to do differently moving forward because that's not what's happening. I mean, I don't know where she is now with this whole Tom situation, but.
Well, it's so interesting because first there was a report, I think on Friday that she was checking into a mental health facility. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, okay, cool, great.
What?
But now, I don't know. I haven't followed this too closely. Now it seems like maybe, and again, this is information. It seems like maybe what they were terming a mental health facility actually isn't like a real mental health facility. And it was kind of put out there almost like a PR stunt. Like it's actually more just kind of like a spa-like environment. But what I heard, and I might be wrong about this, but what I heard in the internet grumblings that her family actually put out this press release. And I also heard Sheena was saying that she felt her filing the restraining order may have come from pressure from her sister. And so I just bring this in because, again, if these things are true, again, it's more information about here's this young woman bottoming. I mean, she's at what could be a bottom. And you've kept bringing in, like, Raquel's so aware of how things look, how things look, how things look. If these reports are true, it's just interesting that her family seems to be orienting around how do we make this look better, which means making this like you're the victim, but it's also all surface. It's like, it's all there. If she's filing fake restraining orders over a punch that didn't happen, and if she's checking into a spa, but like they're telling people it's a mental health treatment, it's like, there's no, we're not dealing with the actual issue. We're just concerned about optics. We're doing what we have to do to make it look good. We're presenting you as the victim. And then there's mixed messages. There it is. I mean, you know what I mean? There's tons of mixed messages just there.
It's like, yeah, that on a micro level, this is, how do we fix this? And again, to your point about not being able to do laundry, this isn't something that she's figuring out on her own. Somehow it feels like there's a team around her that are deciding what's important for her, not asking her what feels important for her from her inside. So it's, I don't see this helping her unless the spa that she's at or the facility that she's at actually has someone who's supporting her to really consider where her actions are coming from, what about them feel familiar, and what is she working out? What is she trying to know about herself here?
Well, I just keep getting the feeling as we're talking, you know, because we all, a lot of times we like to bring this question of, you know, what would the person need to heal? What's sort of needed here? I keep getting this feeling like you got to get away from this family. Like, I just feel like she needs to, and from fame, from all of it, just like go somewhere where she can be on her own and be supported to start getting in touch with her feelings, you know, and have complete permission to name whatever needs and wants to be named, and to get into slow modulated relationship with the different currents of energy inside of her. Because I keep coming back to the image of the projector, and I just keep feeling like you've just been a projection screen your whole life for all these different forces. And I have to imagine there's some sort of maybe sacred relationship to that. Like there's, you know, from an archetypal perspective, mm-hmm. I just get the sense that she's like a projection screen, and there's been a lot projected onto her. And she's like, yeah, she's like internalizing all the different light projections that sort of come into her, and then they get shaken up, discombobulated, and scattered. And she just projects them back out as like these little specks on the wall. And maybe that's part of what's so disturbing about her. For anyone who watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, there was a season where suddenly 5 seasons in, all of a sudden, Buffy has been an only child for the whole run of the show. All of a sudden, the premiere of the 5th season, she's got this little sister who's like 13 years old, who's never been there before. But in the show, they're acting like she's always been there. And as a viewer, you didn't really understand. And of course, it turns out she's really like, she's basically like this sort of metaphysical energy, and these monks like put her into human form and sent her to Buffy to be protected. But the reason I bring this up is like there's this episode where Buffy starts to realize like, you're not really my sister. And she sort of gets the power to see, and she can kind of see through her sister. And then she sees like, rather than seeing her little sister's bedroom, she sees that it's actually like the spare office. And it's kind of this notion of like, you can put your hand through her and she's not really there. And that's, I just bring this up because that's almost like what Raquel feels like. It's like, you've been this walking projection screen where light is just sort of moving into you and through you. And I just have to wonder if on some level, that's part of what's just been so distressing about her as an archetype in all of this, of just like, I don't know, this woman who's sort of there, but not really there, but yet the impact can be so destructive. It's not like, it's not innocuous. It's not harmless. It's like that vortex of light can do something. And that, I don't know, I can just feel how that can be disturbing. Mm-hmm. Like we don't see it coming.
Yeah. Like a little hologram.
Yeah, the one you never saw coming.
I was just kind of thinking about her less as this character that's on this show, but just, you know, really her as a being, you know, on this planet right now, and everything that has happened before she arrived at this point. You know, I'm just sort of feeling everything that's happened for her up until this point of where she's acting something out, she's playing something out here. And I was just wondering, like, what would help her connect with her power? Because as you were talking about her as this projector, it's like there's a sense that, you know, what gets projected is it works for people. She's on this show. She was cast in something. Like you said, she has a reach here, and now it's kind of coming back to her in a way that probably doesn't feel so good. But, you know, something about connecting with this stream of power and like giving her a container to actually feel the edges of who she is so that she can really step into herself, take ownership of who she is, and connect with what her purpose is, like why she does have all this energy of attraction, energy of, you know, being able to catalyze something.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that she would want to do with this energy other than attracting men and using them?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say as we're sitting with her in these final moments, I just feel, you know, this place in me that just says, you know, I don't envy her. I don't envy her. This feels like...
You don't envy her.
I don't envy her. I mean, she's walking with some stuff that's... I mean, it feels very deep and it feels like it's going to take a lot of resolve and willingness and time to work through. I kind of keep just sitting with like, you know, because I look at everything from a soul task perspective. Like, what is her soul choosing in this lifetime? You know, what are the lessons she's meant to learn? What is she supposed to master? Like, and what... Kind of what I was saying before, what's almost the sacred version of being the projector or the projection screen and then the projector? Or maybe I just named it. Suddenly it's like, oh, I take in what's coming towards me and there's a way I'm able to project it back out in a way that kind of illuminates things for people. Whereas right now, the distorted version, it's like, I'm just taking in all these different messages and I'm discombobulated and I'm a swirling top and my energy is leaving my body and now I'm in this like world of chaos. But, you know, maybe there's a version of it that's intentional. That's like, I'm able to really sort of take in what I'm seeing and project it back out in a way that's sort of illuminating and revealing with discernment and choice, you know, and maybe if I bring back in what I was talking about last time, if there is some sort of relationship to the dark feminine and like sacred destruction, like as a way to kind of like dismantle you and then help you kind of like reconfigure in a way that's empowering. You know, I don't know. These are just things I'm thinking about off the top of my head, but mm-hmm. I don't condone what she's done. I do feel for her. I feel for how lost she feels. And that's why I'm saying, I hope she can find her, even if like she literally doesn't get away from her family. I hope she can find a space to carve out where she actually feels real permission. Like you're saying, just to get to know herself for who she actually is and how she actually feels about things. And I mean, I hope she gets away from Tom, just all the outside influences, all the outside voices.
All the outside voices that are telling her, literally projecting onto her who they see her as or who they want her to be for them. And that she makes contact with what her interest in expression is. From that place, if, like you said, if she's taking in something and projecting something out, that the light that she shines is shining on something that matters to her, that actually has something meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And that the people that are around her, like if they stay around her, that there is someone that comes into her life or, yeah, this is my wish for her, that the whoever can support her with this is able to hold a really wide open container for her to actually feel herself in.
And by the way, I mean, I just have to point out, I mean, if we kind of run with this projector metaphor, in a way it's kind of already happening. Like, you know, I mean, we didn't even really touch on this, but isn't it interesting? You know, Sheena and Lala. I mean, I actually really, oh, so, okay. This is how I'm going to conclude. There's two things I'm going to say with regards to Lala. Just because I know in our Scandoval episode, I really explored my being triggered around Lala, which is very true. I was very triggered by how she was holding all of this. You and I were talking recently. I do want to say I've really been coming round to her a lot more in the last few weeks. I really see how she's trying. Like, and I just want, and we won't, we're at the end of the episode. We won't go into a whole digression about this, but I just want to name it because I was so clear to name being triggered by her in the interest of balance. I just really want to put it out there. I really do see how she's trying. And I do see an increased capacity of self-awareness in her. Even the way that she's been navigating stuff in the last few episodes, I see something happening in her that does feel like a shift and a change. And I want to name that. So I want to say that. But also, you know, in terms of the projector, it's like, because what I felt when she was sitting on that bed, was it with Sheena? Or at some point, she was just getting so upset about what Raquel was doing and the impact on Katie. And I was just sitting there like, I feel like what's happening on some level is Lala is seeing the impact that the actions of the other woman has on the woman at home. And even if she can't let herself know this, I think she's starting to feel the impact of some of her own decisions and choices. And so that's what sort of why she's getting so triggered by this. But, you know, I'm saying that because there's an example of the projection screen. It's like, you know, she's pulling a light into her and she's projecting it back out. And then you're kind of seeing Lala have to see something. You know, it might be interesting to explore. I mean, it's even interesting because, you know, I told you Sheena's so upset about who is this woman? Have I ever really known her? And again, not to get too lost in my digression, you know, Sheena has her own kind of relationship to being like a blank-eyed sort of blank screen, you know? So it's just, again, you could say those questions exist around Sheena. Like, who are you really? Like Sheena, you know, you kind of mentioned this briefly last time. She has her own relationship too to disowned cruelty and aggression for sure. So it's just kind of interesting. You see those seeds of like, maybe Raquel is already unconsciously, unknowingly, unintentionally reflecting things back to people in a way that's not too comfortable.
And she often uses the word, you know, she calls out hypocrisy. She's certainly done it with Lala. I feel like she's done it with Katie recently. I feel like she called a couple people out. So maybe I'm interested in this last piece that you're bringing in around the projector and what the role of the projector is.
Swallows up the light and then projects it back out in a new form.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, okay, Piper. I feel like this feels complete to me now. So thank you so much.
Good. I'm so glad.
For, you know, creating the time to complete this. I feel like we gave it its true due. Any final thoughts? Are you feeling complete?
I am feeling over-complete. Overdone, as they say.
All right. Well, as always, follow me on Instagram, Jamie Stein, JAMIESTEIN. And I have been mentioning this, but I'm going to mention again, guys. I know that a lot of times people have just, you know, really kind of engaging, deep thoughts, comments, insights, or questions. I love the conversations that emerge in the wake of these podcast episodes. So I am putting it out there that I do have a Deep Dive with Jamie Stein Facebook group. If you're listening to this, if you have things perking up in you that you want to say, that you want to express, if there are things that you learned about yourself, if you have questions about any topics or the themes, I'm going to put the link in the show notes. Head on over there, answer a few questions, join the group. And I really have an intention to start creating not just that space, but more spaces, but starting with that space for people to actually really take these conversations to a deeper level. Oh, and also you can follow me on TikTok, Housewives Empath. And you can go to my website if you're interested in my work, hollywoodreadings.com, and send me an email. Okay, everyone, as always, thank you so much for being here, and I will see you on the flip side. Bye.